This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Right now, get up to 20% off select online storage solutions. Put heavy-duty HDX totes to good use, protecting what's important to you. The solid, impact-resistant design prevents cracking. And the clear base and sides make items easy to find, even when the totes are stacked. Find select online shelving and tote storage up to 20% off at the Home Depot to organize every room in your home, from your garage to your attic. Visit HomeDepot.com. How doers get more done.
What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? It's Courtney Williamson, the We Do This Too Outdoors. This podcast is going to be an older conversation I had with my homeboy Bubba Ray from Power Circle Outdoors down in Galveston, Texas. It's a great podcast. It was actually going to be part two of a two-part series that we did, and I never did get part two out. But Bubba right now is going through some radiation treatments and chemo treatments down in Galveston. He's got cancer. Not really sure what type of cancer he's got, but he's going through some radiation and cancer treatments and everything. So I just kind of wanted to put this podcast out just for him, just to keep his spirits up and everything like that. So, Bubba, man, I know you're going to be listening to this, so we're all rooting for you, brother. And if there's anything that I can do for you, you know, just let me know. You know, you my aunt, you the OG. Love you to death, man. So this is just to keep your spirits up and just keep holding on, brother. God got you. Everything's going to be all right, man. So this podcast is for William Bubba Ray, Power Circle Out.
We do this too. We're bringing that fire. Talking real talk. Kentucky's on fire. From bourbon to ball games, we got that flow. On the We Do This Too podcast, yeah, you know. From country roads to the city lights, they bring the heat, man, every night. We do this too, let's make it clear. If you ain't listening, you ain't here.
Welcome back, y'all. It's another edition of the We Do This Too Outdoors podcast. And as always, we are presented to you in partnership with brands that we feel represent the very best of the outdoor industry. So before we get started, we'd like to give a special shout out to Moultrie Products, Uhler's Archery, Threads Custom Bowstrings, G5 Outdoors, Blackburn Apparel Company, Deer Pip Scents and Lures, Vision Clothing, Bluebird Waterfowl Company, Angry Chicken Outdoors, Alps Outdoors, and last but certainly not least, a special shout out to the good folks over at Briley's for leaving a legacy of shooting innovation. Whether you need new cameras to elevate the scouting experience, new arrows, or anything for your archery setups, clothing, scent, or whatever it may be, as a supporter of the podcast, you can use promo code WDTTPROMO, that's WDTTPROMO, for 15% off anything on the website at Uhler'sArchery.com. Some exclusions may apply. With that being said, let's dive into another episode of the We Do This Too Outdoors podcast with your host, Mr. Courtney Williams.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another edition of the We Do This Too Outdoors podcast. I'm your host, Courtney Williamson. I've got a special guest today on, Mr. William Bubba Ray. How you doing, brother?
What's going on, Courtney? Welcome up. Glad to be here, brother.
What's up, man? So I found this guy. He reached out to me on a couple social media platforms, man, and I've been talking to this man. He's an OG. I call him up. He's been in the game for a really long time, man, and he's got some stories that I feel like need to be told. So this episode is going to be uncut. He's going to tell the truth about his experiences growing up as an African-American hunter in Texas. And these stories need to be told. Something that everybody needs to hear, I feel like. So, Mr. Bubba Ray, introduce yourself.
Hello, everyone out there. Captain William Bubba Ray. Some people just call me Bubba, better known as Bubba Ray. Been a professional hunting guide and fishing guide since about 1999, but I grew up in the outdoors. My dad got me into hunting. My grandfather on mom's side got me into fishing and was fortunate enough to parlay it into a career. So if anybody knows, I've probably been in this here about 45, 50 years now, between learning how to do it and doing it professionally. Full, you know, I was a full-time guide for about 30 years.
What's up, man? So how did you get introduced to the outdoors, and what led you to continue to be in the outdoors?
Okay, let's see. We're going to have to go way back here now. I got to throw my thinking cap. As I said earlier, start with my grandfather on my mother's side. My mother's side of the family, they were farmers, vegetable farmers, stayed in a small town here on the Texas coast called Hitchcock, Texas. And part of what they did for sustenance was hunting fish. So we're probably, if you catch a red light or two, we might be 15 minutes from the water, from the bay. So my grandfather would fish, go collect oysters. He would even duck hunt. That's where I kind of get the duck hunting aspect from what we do, from him duck hunting, farm and all that. And then if you hop over to my dad's side of the family, my daddy's side of the family was from a town called Brenham, Texas, about two hours inland from the coast. They come from the cotton farming region of the state. And again, his family was into small game hunting. They coon hunted, rabbit hunt, squirrel hunt. And from a little kid, whenever my grandfather or my dad picked up a gun, I was the one howling and kicking and screaming, wanting to go. And started out the hunting with my dad, rabbit hunting, coon hunting.
That's what's kinda up, man.
Kind of where I got my teeth cut at.
That's right, man. And so tell everybody how old you are.
Turned 62 about 3 weeks ago. And you call me Huck and OG. I guess I'm official OG status now, I guess.
You definitely OG status, man. Like, like I told you earlier, man, it's a respect thing with me, man. You know, people that's older than me, you know, as my daddy used to say, I've been your age, you ain't never been mine. You know, so, you know, y'all been through the struggles, man. Y'all been through it to make people like me. You know, I'm about to be 40 years old, and you know, y'all went through a lot that we, as the younger generation, we still go through it a little bit, but we didn't have it as hard as y'all had it. Mm-hmm. So tell me about some struggles that you had growing up in the outdoor industry, man. Because I know, you know, off camera, man, we talked about some of these stories, man. So I need to get them on wax. The people need to hear these stories.
Yeah, seen a lot, done a lot. I've had the best and the worst. So when I tell you it's two extremes, I can tell you war stories. What you want to start with, some of the worst or some of the best?
Let's go with some of the best, and then we'll get into some of the worst. So some of the best stories you got. Whether it be duck hunting, dove hunting, deer hunting, whatever you got.
Like I said, my dad and them were. My dad was crazy about coon hunting. Crazy. We've had some of the best tree and walkers and red ticks in the state. Have several night champions. We hunted the UKC and ACHA circus for years. I guess I started coon hunting about 9 or 10, father and dad. And have coon hunted several states, met a lot of great people. I mean, a lot of great people. I've actually qualified a dog or two for the world, UKC World Championship. Champion, night champion, show champions, grand night champion, stuff like that. That was all part of it. And when we got into it, you got to say that was late 70s, early 80s. Well, late 70s, because I graduated high school in 81. So you got to think that in the 70s, we were going to, they call it wild coon hunt competition. And to be the minority is something different. You go to one of these hunts, and at that time, coon hunt was big, if you know what I'm talking about, back in the day. You go to one of those hunts, it may be 500 people there. And after 500 people, it may be 4 or 5 black people. And you wasn't supposed to have any dogs of any caliber, you know what I'm saying?
Right. You're supposed to have the least of the least, like the run.
The least of the least, stuff like that. You know, then, you know, when we cut our teeth, kind of got in, it took, you know, it takes you about a year to get to figure out the ins and outs of it and the breeding and getting the type of dog and the breeding stock that you want. But I can remember I had a little red tick female, and her name was Music. I liked she pretty much was the one of the litter that we had. And I hunted her up against a dog called Trapper. And Trapper at the time was going to a futurity hunt, and he was probably top 5 dogs in the state. And we hunted a local club hunt, and I drew out with him. And you got to realize that I'm probably 12 or 13.
God, you're young.
I'm young. You know, I'm young, you know. And my dad had enough dog to let me go out in these night hunts with these guys. We go to the clubhouse. He may draw out with 4 other people, and I go with 4 people, go 50 miles the other direction. But this particular night, my little female, she's a great strike dog, awesome cold nose, good track dog, and she was decent on the tree. And me and Trapper battled all night long. I'd get first strike, and he'd get first tree. And that went on all night long. And at the end of the night, I beat him by 25 points. And I can still remember this day. We got back into the clubhouse. My dad was waiting on me. And he walks up to me, "How bad did he beat you?" And I looked at my dad with the biggest grin on my face. I said, "Daddy, I tore that butt up tonight." He was like, "What?" Yeah, I said, "I beat him by 25 points." And nobody could believe me. I went up there and grabbed the trophy. You know, here I am, a little 12-year-old kid, a bunch of grown men, you know.
Right.
Hunting against this dual champion. You know, and they were like, they couldn't believe it. Well, you know, I was on cloud nine for about 6 months after that, you know?
Right. So, that's dope. That's a good story.
That happened. And then, with that being said, though, even with that, I've seen the best and the worst. I've seen some of the most outrageous cheating. Did you ever do any field child?
No, never did any of that, man.
You heard about it, right?
Yeah, I've heard about it. I got some buddies that does the rabbit trials with the rabbit dogs, but I've never done any myself personally.
One particular night we was on one. This time was probably 15, and there was a guy in the Brazoria Coon Club. We did a hunt that night and drew out, and they got certain rules. Dogs can't fight. You can't whip your dog. It's disqualification. Dog fights, disqualification. Dog runs in the off game, disqualification. A bunch of rules like that. One particular one, if your dog runs in the off game, like you say your buddy's rabbit hunt, or doing that rabbit trial, if the beagle jump a deer and they know it's a deer, he's scrapped. But this particular night, I was hunting one of my little tree and walking male. And they were running the same thing. Me and the guys going back and forth. We battling for the lead. They jump something, and you know it's not a coon because it's burning up the bottom. These dogs jumped a buck, went into a creek, baited, had enough. The head guy that night, God rest his soul, his name was Mr. Walker, got to the slough, waited out in the slough, pulled out his buck knife and cut that deer's throat. Drug it to the bank, cut him a sap and tied him, took their belts off him, another guy, hauled that deer back out the woods to the truck, gutted it, hung it up. We come back to where we were. He said, all right, now who want to whoop their dog? They beat the dogs. That was the second disqualifying point. Got through. Then said, how are we going to do these points? And I watched them flip a coin on that particular track. Who got first track, who got first trees, and they plus the points and kept hunting. And the whole four dogs should have been disqualified.
Oh, man.
Hey, we get back to the club, I started thinking, my dad said, well, what happened? I said, Dad, you ain't going to believe this here. Then, and to hush you up, when they got back, they was going to quarter the deer up. All four guys get a quarter of the deer to keep your mouth shut and don't tell nobody. And, you know, you hunt with one of them big-time stud dogs. It's supposed to be, And they said, I see them the next couple of hunts, they bragging about the dog. And I wanted to tell them, that's the trashiest dog in the world. While you're out here bragging, he's such a good coon dog, I wanted to tell you, he's a hell of a deer dog.
Yeah.
So I've seen that. That's so I had to learn that when you hear these guys on these lands with these dogs and whatever it may be, and they tell you how good it is, it's a lot of BS behind a lot of it.
So you've seen this in the coon hunting world, you've seen this in the waterfowl world, or you've seen this in the fishing world? Because I think you told me he was the first guy or the first black man in Texas, right, with a deal for riding reels, right?
Yeah, I've definitely seen the fishing world. When I transitioned from small game and got a little older, if you want to backtrack a little bit, I got into watching all the hunting and fishing shows on TV, and I never saw one of us on there. Just never saw a black guy. And I would ask my mom and dad, the black guys on Wild World of Sports and whatever it may be on Saturday mornings, you get up and watch that show. And, you know, my mom would always just shush me, son, go to college, be something like that. I said, no, mom, I want to be a professional outdoorsman. That's my dream. I don't know, son, you go to college, play some ball, I'll get your degree, doctor, lawyer, whatever. I said, mom, I want to be a professional outdoorsman. And I could never figure out, you know, why. But I was always the guy, I would read. I bet you my mom got tired of me. I had a stack of Sports to Field and Field and Stream and all those magazines. You go in my room, and you're 50, 100 high, you know, I'd read everything and try to learn how to do this myself. And what really helped me, my dad, we had a family-owned construction business. My dad was a brick mason. And I still own the company to this day. So I worked from the time I was 13, 14. And I was able to buy my first gun at 16. I bought my rod and reels. I'd work out on the weekends and summer. I bought my fishing poles and all that stuff. And whatever I read, I'd go try on my own. You know? Anybody, so people say, you know, who taught you? I said, I come out to school with a hard knock. I'd go try. And you want to hear a funny story? My first duck hunting trip was hilarious. My first duck hunt was hilarious. We'll get to that in a minute. But yeah, and in the fishing world, I start going fishing and all that. Just want, I'd go down to the tackle store, and I'd walk around the tackle store for hours looking just dumbfounded, don't know what to get. And I'd buy one of these and one of those and one of these, and I'd ask the guy in the store how you do this and how you do that. And then I'd go to the water and catch nothing for weeks. Yeah. Finally, one day, you know, it just clicked and got to the point where as a 19, 20-year-old guy, I was catching much fish as all the guys around here, and all the guys were calling me.
That's what's up.
See what was going on in the kitchen? Yeah.
Trial and error, man. You figured it out.
Figured it out the hard way. So the same thing with duck hunting, waterfowl. And we know I've guided deer hunts, duck hunts, hog hunts, and all that. But waterfowling is what, to me, is just the ultimate. Shot deer, shot hogs, dove hunt, all that. But something about waterfowl just ticks my trigger. You know what I'm saying?
I'm right there with you, man.
Every day of the season.
So I've only been duck hunting for waterfowl hunting for about 3 years now, but I got bit by the bug pretty hard, and I would consider myself a waterfowler now, man. Like I look forward to it more than I do deer season now.
I tell people it's the most fun you can have with your clothes on.
That's right. Hey, you ain't lying there, man. Like, anybody that ain't been done, you know, has not done any waterfowl hunting, man, I encourage y'all to find somebody that goes and just go one time, and I promise you will get hooked.
But back with fishing stories, I started guiding professionally. Well, I started tournament fishing around age 20, 22. And then we went in a whole lot of local tournaments and stuff like that, and then kept in the back of my mind, I want to be a guide. And then I was working for a company, and they gave us a guided trip as a employee appreciation day. And when they asked who wanted to go, of course, my hand flew up 100 miles an hour. Yeah, man, I want to get in on that. And we booked with a guy turned out to be a good friend of mine, Mike Moses, down in Matterport County. And we went down there and booked a fishing trip on New Year's Day. And all prior to that, all I was hearing was the bites wide open, we're catching big ones, it's going to be trip of a lifetime. And we got down there on New Year's Day and we fished about 10 hours and we caught two fish.
Oh, man.
Look, the front, well, and we couldn't say it because the front blew in. The condition was bad. It was cold. It was miserable. And we got through that evening, and Mike was like, man, I feel so bad about this. Man, if y'all want to come back in a couple of weeks, I'll give you another one at half price. And we're like, oh, that's good. I'm saying that. Well, we got through. We paid him off and gave him a nice tip. So we driving back home. I'm thinking the four of us went on that first day and with the tip and all thing, he made about $580. I'm like, that's not a bit, pretty bad little hustle, you know?
Right.
He called us about 2 weeks later. Oh, man, got it good again. Man. Come on, y'all get on in the truck, get on down here. This time, six of us went back. Oh, we're going to get you on them this time. On the second trip, we caught seven fish. Look,
five more than the last trip.
Yeah, five more than the last one. So, again, we paid him and tipped him and all that. That's when bell went off in my head. We drive, it's about an hour and a half drive back to the house. I said, we didn't give this man about $1,200 for two fishing trips. Awesome. And caught about seven fish.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, I went in between them two trips by myself in my area, and we caught 40 fish. So somebody got a good hustle going, and I don't even know why I'm not in on it.
Right.
I'm saying this is bull calling. So I said, man, let me start looking into it. That's when I knuckled down and got serious about it. Started really honing in my craft and all that. And I made my mind up that I was going to eventually do it. But if you knew how many naysayers was out there telling me I was wasting my damn time to try to do it. And what I was told verbatim was this here, Gordon. Ain't no white folks going to go with you. It ain't no black
folks. Ain't no black folks going to pay no money. Yeah.
Don't pay no money. And I thought about that. I go like, what? And this was coming from white people, white friends of mine, white guys who were calling me to go fishing, white guys that were calling me, will you catch your fish? And I said, so I told one of them, I said, wait a minute. So you telling me if I take Bill X, you know, Johnny X fishing and can put him on fish, he'd rather pay you to not take him to catch fish than pay me to take him to catch fish. And the guy told me, I'm just telling you, bro, you got a good job, had a good company job at that time. He said, you're wasting your time. If you quit your company job and start guiding, he goes, you'll do lucky to get 20 trips a season. So then you're looking at, by this time, I'm married and stuff, you know, so you're sitting there going, 20 trips ain't going to pay too many bills, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to figure stuff, but I'll be honest, about 5 years, I listened to this shit. I did. But in between that, we fished the local tournament, and them same guys that's telling me that, I wish you could sit on, that's a third place, second place, first place, first place, first place, second place, third place. You know, I'm handing them their hat, you know?
Yeah.
But they're buddy-buddy up with you for that aspect of it. Man, did you go out this week? What was y'all on the south side or north end? Where y'all was in the creek? Or, you know, well, but then I tell you, you want to get together fish trip? I don't know. We can't fish together.
And it won't be seen with you.
What you mean I can't be seen? No. I'll tell you a really good one, man. I got lucky that a buddy of mine works on cars. He had they was doing a hot rod. Little white guy, young white guy. He's about 5, 6 years younger. He liked to fish. He goes, man, you want to go fishing? I go, sure. And me and him start fishing together. And we actually learned a lot together. Got to the point where Sam started fishing his tournament. Let's go jump, fish the Trout Master series. I don't know, man. I don't know if we want to do that. I'm still asking him why. So, man, I don't know if we should do that. So there was a small local tournament come up called the Susan B. Anthony Tournament. We went fished it out of 16-foot John boat with a 40 horsepower Yamaha. We get to the parking lot, there's rangers, skeeters. you know, everything you know with 200s and 250s and all that on it.
Yeah.
And the weather was bad that morning. And we got ready to lunch that morning. We over there at the little giant boat. And the tournament director, they was going to hold a lunch off about 30, 40 minutes to hour, let this weather pan. So we was the laughing stock. Y'all walks over with me, goes, y'all go fishing that?
Yes.
Only boat we got. You know, y'all might need a little head start, huh? Me, I looked at him, me and Clint, I'll take it. If you want to give me one. He turns around to the crowd and he goes, does any of y'all mind if they lunch now? And the whole, it might have been a 40 boat field. They laughed. Yeah, tell them go ahead on.
And y'all the only brothers there, right?
Hey, back then, little 16-foot John, but after lunch, you know what? Thank you, little the little 60 horsepower, and right on out of sight. We had to be back at the dock. Two or three. I want to say it was two. About quarter to two, here we come back. Same term direct, come out to the dock. He flagged down, throw us a line, we tied. He looked at us, man, y'all got any fish? We got one or two. Y'all got a couple of fish for real? Yeah. See, man, we ain't weighed in before fish all day. Oh, okay, we got this one. Me and him had each fish that he caught was on one string and one mouth was on another. We opened the live way, hold up the first string. We got trout, redfish, and flounder. Oh, hurry up, get a basket. The boys got fish. They get the first string and turn around and go to walk up. Hold on, brother. We got a whole nother string of fish here. We end up winning. Listen to this. Going first, second, and third, redfish. First, second, and third, trout. First, second, and third, flounder in the tournament. Now, we put it on the trailer. We sitting there getting our little award and our little checks and stuff. The old white man walked around that boat and that Suburban for about 10 minutes, shaking his head and scratching it, shaking his head. He turned around and looked at me. He said, sometime it ain't the boat, it's the sun. I said, no, sir, it ain't. Now, he's sitting over there with an $8,000 rig, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He's like this. He said, I got all this boat over here. I said, it ain't always the boat. But I just want to say how they laughed at us because we showed up like that. I said, it's about the skill level. And from that point on, I've had snakes put in my truck. I might have told you that the other day.
I need to hear that story.
I was running a charter. And when I got to rolling good, I was running about 270 days a year. I was running 20 days a month without even trying. And after a while, you get to running on autopilot.
All right.
I get in, wash down the boat, get all my gear straightened away, gas up. I go lay down, and my wife or whoever will talk to the customer for tomorrow. But this particular morning, I got them, had them meet me at the dock, marina at 5:30, whatever. Launched the boat, and I had an F-250. And for some reason, I left the back driver's side window down. I didn't even know, pay attention. And I may leave, get out the rods and stuff that we need and leave a couple in there. And you'd be so busy trying to get in the water, get out the way from the next people launching the boat and all that. I never thought about rolling that window. We shot off in the bay, we caught our fish. We got in about 12 because we were doing half day charter. I get up 12, tie the boat off to the dock. I get out the boat, start walking to my truck, and I notice the back window's down. My first inclination, somebody had broke the window out and maybe stole them other rods in there. As I got close to the truck, I went to, instead of going to the driver's door, I went to the back door to look in. I'm expecting to see broken glass or something like that. But I just realized then I left the window down. And the rods were still in there. I said, oh, Lord, thank you, Jesus. So there ain't nobody breaking my truck. So I opened the door, just look, you look around, see if anything missing.
Right.
When I looked in missing, somehow my peripheral in the front seat moved down by the floorboard, by the gas and brake pedal. And I looked, jumped back, about a 5-foot rattlesnake.
Oh, Lord.
I mean, not no little rattlesnake, but a lot of rattlesnake.
A lot of rattlesnake.
Oh, a lot of rattlesnake.
Mm.
So I jumped back, and I said, man, I went to holler and the customers run up on me. What's going on? There's a snake in my truck. They go, a snake, a rattlesnake. So now I take the keys open the driver's door and I pop it open. That just went to buzz. Well, I go back to the boat, get an oar, and we get him out of there. I kill him, you know. But think about if I'd have went to the driver's door first.
Right.
And just stepped up in my truck, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you got bit.
Because he had to be like up in the corner, almost under the seat. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And man, I was. Oh, you could have fried fish on me that day.
Hot.
I said, now, who would do that? Now, you tell me to do that. You got to know who I am.
Yep.
Now, with that being said, I had placards on my truck. Name of my gas service was Big Three Gas Service. It said Captain William Bubba Ray, Trout, Redfish, Flounder, Duck Hunts, all numbered website. So you know who truck you're fooling with. You know what I'm saying?
Right. You know, yeah, they know who you were.
You know who you were. Now, where they got the snake from and all that is beyond me. I mean, if nothing else, you could have had a heart attack. You look down, see a rattlesnake between your legs.
Right.
So, you know, all the cops did all that, but they're going to like, what can we do? We don't know. We have no idea who did it.
Right.
Then I guess some of the other things that went along with that. When I first started, I wasn't quote unquote a threat. You know what I'm saying?
I got
just so like first you try and do it. Well, that first my first year, I got my captain's license in February of 99. I went and bought the baddest 23 can on the market. When I decided to go in, like I told you before, I was listening to people not doing it. When I made up my mind I was gonna do this here. I can backtrack on that a little bit too. When I decided to go get my license, you got to go to Coast Guard training school and get your captain's license. And then you got to be licensed by the Parks and Wildlife. You got some steps to take. And there was always a big fishing expo here in Houston. And I read the schedule and said, they have a seminar about getting a captain's license. Me, Clint, the same guy I was telling you about, another guy, we going to go to the fishing shop. I said, well, I'm going to go sit in on the seminar about getting this captain's license. Now, these guys is white. Why you want to do that? There's a thing about starting gang. So I said, if y'all want to go walk around, I'll catch up with y'all. Nah, we're going to go with you. So we went there, sat down, we sat to a seminar, and I got all the information, got the brochures, papers, and shit. So all the way back from fishing, so they telling me I'm crazy. Man, you're wasting your time. You're wasting your time. The next week, he tells me, guess what I did? I said, what? I rushed to go get my captain's license. But you told me I shouldn't do it.
Right.
But you tell him how to go do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, ain't this nothing? So he went, he actually got his license about 3 months before I got mine. I went, took the course, got my license, bought my boat. I'll tell you how I bought my first gas boat. There was a local dealership that told me on the construction. I went and laid 5,000 blocks and did addition to their dealership. That's how I got the down payment for my first boat.
Wow.
So I went and got the top of the line, everything. My dad, everybody was scared for me. Man, son, you're going to quit your job, start fishing. My dad told me, go get a used boat. I said, why would I do that? Man, you don't know if you're going to have no customers, better pay for no new boat and all that. And this is what we got to do as black people. He said, I said, no, Dad, I can't do that. He goes, well, I don't need no excuse for nobody not to want to go fishing with me.
Right.
When they pull up to the marina, what boat is yours? See the big blue one with all the bells and whistles?
That's mine.
Hey, that's mine. So when I got it, he was like, oh, my God. I don't know how many times I heard this right here. We on the ferry or different place pulling the boat, pull up. I got on a jacket with my gas service and that Captain Bubba on it. Hey, that's a nice rig out there. Who you pulling it for, son?
They didn't think it was yours.
I mean, people come knock on your door. We sitting on the ferry, crossing the ferry, when they do knock on the door of my window. I roll the window. Can I help? Man, that sure is a fine rig you pulling back there. Well, thank you, sir. But who you pulling it for? What you mean, who I'm pulling it for? Well, we see the gas service on the side, Captain Bubba. You know him? I said, I think I know him. I reached down in my console, gave him a call, handed it to him. I give him a call. I heard he been catching him. Yeah, call him. I said, give him a call right now. He answered the phone. And look, the guy picks up his phone, dials it. His phone rings right in my truck. I go, hello? You go, hello? Yeah, I'm about to help you. That's how, I can't tell you how many times that happened. Oh, enormously amount of time, they would always second guess who you are, what you got. They walk around the boat from top to bottom, you know, back to front. You know, when you're a U.S. captain, it's just like on a cruise ship or something, you are the in charge legally. I've had people tell me what I'm going to do on my boat, what they wasn't going to do on my boat. We did a corporate trip one day with Auto Nation. We had like 40 boats. And when they brought everybody in on charter buses, and all the guys had a card with your boat number and your name on it. So I was boat 14. I just like yesterday, a guy walked up there. Boat 14? Yes, sir. Which boat is that? The big blue one? Where's the captain at? I'm sitting there with holding a salad. Look. You know, you like. No, check this out, Courtney. They turn around and walk off about 20 yards and huddle up. I'm over there watching this, and they turn around and come back to me. So you the guy? Yes, sir. They turn around and walk off again. Huddle up again. Another cow will come back in and say, what's going on? Do you know where any fish at? I said, sir, let me tell you quick. Let me tell you something. I got paid when I put that boat in the water. I said, now we can do two things. We can do two or three things. We can go for a boat ride. We can go fishing, or we can go try to win this tournament. Which one you want to do? Don't make me no difference.
Right.
Well, we want to try to win. I go, well, just shut up and get in my boat. Well, the guy looked at me kind of saying, I said, what? I said, get in the boat. You wasting time. He got in the boat. They looked down. And I got a full rod sponsorship, real sponsorship. I'm a gold level Mercury guy. All this here. I said, here's six baitcaster. Here's six spinning reel. You're free to use anything on this boat but this reel right here. This is my personal rod reel that my wife bought me for an anniversary present. Okay, we take off, go across the bay, get to the fishing ground. One guy, every time we stop, he'll pick up that gold reel rod. And I go, excuse me, sir, didn't I tell you you can fish on it? It's 12 rods on this boat. You can use any one but this gold. You know what he told me? I'm paying you. I can use what I want.
After you done told him not to use it.
I told him not. I said, what I'm paid for this charter, this rod and reel is worth more than that. It was a gold Shimano Chrono Super Free and a custom Bayrite rod. The reel was probably $350 at the time, and the rod was about $500 custom made rod. My wife gave it to me for the first time. I said, every time the boat would stop, he grabbed my reel. So what are you doing? I'm paying you. I can do what I want in this boat. What you think? what you did?
Man, I told him to get off my boat.
Hey, and I told the rest of them, I said, the fishing trip is going to get cut short. Oh, man. Same thing. We were throwing bait that day. And the way we did it, I supply ice, rod reels, lures, all that. If you had a live bait, we make suggestions to the customers on how much they need. I said, the fish are biting live shrimp right now. I suggest you to get 2 quarts. And that's going to take us all the way 12 o'clock. The same guy told me, I'm not going to spend the money on no 2 quarts. I said, why not? We might not use it. And I looked around and told him, this way, the first quart will be gone in about 30, 40 minutes. That's how many fish I'm on right now. All right. Okay. We go over there to the first spot. In 30 minutes, all the shrimp is gone. We already boated like 40 fish. But what we need, what are we going to do? I said, you need some more shrimp. Well, what are we going to do? I said, now let me ask you a question. I'm on anchor. It's about 15 boats around me where I'm fishing at. And they watching us over there meleeing these fish. I said, do you think if I pull up and pull out here, what the boats going to do?
They're going to move in on that spot.
I said, if we had what I told you to purchase, we can stay and fish tomorrow. But man, I feel bad when we'll pay you extra. We'll pay you extra. I said, now I got to go about 15 miles back to the marina and get some more bait. Who gonna offset that expense? Well, you know what's the more fish here? I said, of course I know what's the more fish here. But you kidding what I'm doing here? We end up taking second place in the tournament. They all won rod and reels and trophy. And then I think they ended up winning the cooler, and they gave the cooler to me. Mm-hmm. And the same guy then, man, I want to apologize if I was kind of. I said, if you was kind of, you wasn't kind of nothing, you know?
You're right.
You wasn't kind of. So I've had some of the best experiences. Then, but with that being said, I got referred to on a charter from a customer in the boat to a friend of his. He goes, man, I got a guy, he likes to go fishing too. And we called him out the boat. And the guy got on the phone, said, man, tell me you can catch him good. He goes, yeah. I said, where's your next opening? I looked at my phone and said, it was like a Thursday. I said, I got Sunday open. He said, okay, me and my boys want to come. I said, okay. And he goes, do I need to send you a deposit? I said, well, it really don't make no sense because he had about a 6-hour drive. I said, by the time you put a deposit in the mail, this is before Cash App and Zelle and all that.
Yeah.
I said, before you can mail it to me, I said, you'll be us. I said, so just, I'm going to put you down in the books and come on. He said, well, me and my three boys are coming. I said, okay. I had a black F-250 raised up and all that, big boat and all that. He pulled up in the parking lot. He called me on the phone. Hello? Bobby, this is Mr. Johnson. So I'm here. He walks over to the truck. Now we shake hands on it. He gets out the truck. Blue jean overalls with the bib overall.
Mm-hmm.
Brogan boots. And you know what Brogan boots are, right?
Yes, sir.
Hey, his beard is to his belly. Look like Duck Dynasty through and through. Look like Uncle Si and who? Oh, man. But we talked it up. We said, man. He said, this your rig? He walked around. Oh, man, you got a nice, fine looking rig. Let me go get the boys. I said, okay. Now, when he said boys, I'm thinking children.
Children.
The door opened on the side of Suburban. The first boy got out the truck. The dad was probably 5'10", 5'11", maybe. He probably was 165, 170. The first boy rolled out the second back of that Suburban. He was about 6'3", about 320.
Big old boy.
Look, I looked at him, that's your boy? He said, that's my baby. So he got on overall, beard and all that. Second one got out the other side, he was driving about 6'5", about 350. Same thing, beard down there. All right. Middle boy got out, he about 6'3", about 340. And then my boy is there. And in my heart dropped in my soul. Oh, Lord, what I done got myself into. And they out of, when I say, like you said, down the hollow, deep, back in the woods, boy.
Yeah.
Courtney, the best four men I've met in my life.
Really?
We had the best fishing trip. Oh, my God. We laughed and talked and hooped and hollered. Man. So he come up and go, we need to get some bait. I said, do you boys bass fish here? Next he goes, yeah. So y'all throw proficient and throwing lures? He goes, yeah. I said, we don't need no bait. I'm on a hell of a lure bite right now. He said, no, Bubba, man, we got plenty of money. If we need to buy some bait, minnows or whatever, let's know. I said, no, sir. If you know good, if y'all know how to handle rod reel, we're gonna catch fish. He goes, if you sure now, we loaded up, we launched the boat. First stop was Bird Island. We went across, three pools across the end of Bird Island. First fish in the dock, the old man caught about 5 pounds. We made two more pools. We put about 10 fish in the boat there. All the boys had caught something about 3-4 pounds. I said, well, let's move on to Hannah's Reef. Went to Hannah's, and we picked up about 40.
Wow.
3 and 6 pounds. Look, put them in the boat. And he was like, oh, man, we good. I said, now we're finna go have some fun. We went to a place called the back end of the bay, and the don't know if you've been on the lake. You ever been up doing birds be working over like white bass and stuff?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, the birds are working back there. If we didn't catch 100 fish, we ain't catch one. Now watch this here. About 12:30, the old man, Captain, I'm good. He said, if you good, I'm good. I had all the fun. I could stay and we head on back in. So they went to the cooler, got some of the drinks and said, I squared the butter. We started heading back. Old man sat beside me on the console and we started heading back in. He shook my, looked me in my face, he shook my hand. He reached in his pocket, Courtney, and scared me to death. That man put out a wad of money about this big around, tied with rubber band. Look, I looked over and I was like, what? And that man reached in. At that time, we was charging $400 for a half a day trip. That man whipped off about $800 and shoved it in my pocket. And then he told me, he said, I will never call you to go fishing again in my life. I looked at him, I was like, nah, my mind's racing. My mind's racing. I said, did I say some stupid stuff or stupid shit someone through the morning? I'm playing the mornings back, you know, the day through my mind. I'm riding. He looked at me. He elbowed me in my side. He said, nah, I'm messing with you. He said, I'm never going to call you again. He said, you got my number. Whenever you on fish, you call me. Me and the boys will break loose. He said, I'm self-employed. We are our own business. So you call me and me and the boys are breaking loose. He said, I can be to you in 2 days. Me and that man and his son fished together for about the next 15 years like that.
That's dope.
Hey, I called him up. Hey, Mr. Johnson, bite's good. You hear him hollering, hey, boy, Bubba on the phone. He say he got him cornered up, pinned up. He get back. All right, we're going to get home. Get to Suburban Square. We'll be there day after tomorrow. And so I tell people, I never judge people. I never judge people because there's some good people and then there's some bad ones. And I've heard the extremes of both. Duck hunting, fishing, all that. It's some hilarious duck hunting story. Hilarious. Late 2001, something like that. Me and a guy named James McCoy, that's one of the greatest white men I ever met in my life. We weren't probably the most awesome mounted operation in the state of Texas. We were killing more ducks than anybody in the state proper. And a lot of people would call, well, you know how you want to fill out a gag? Heard y'all on a bunch of ducks. Yes, sir. Bunch of greenhead. Yes, sir. Well, you know, Texas ain't known for a greenhead state, but we got them when the conditions is right and you know what to do.
Right.
I got to the point where I had a bunch of commercial customers, both fishing and hunting, because my fishing customer became my hunting customer. So Halliburton, Shell, Federal Container, Baker Hughes, a lot of those big companies come to me. Guy called me, they booked a party like 8 guys go duck hunting. So y'all, I said, y'all want to come stay on the property with us? Or you want to stay at the, oh, no. You're going to stay at the hotel. I said, well, large and beautiful. No. Well, they figure you got subpar lodging, you know? So we get up there morning, we go to the Holiday Inn meeting. It's always one in the bunch. So you got a bunch of mallets, huh? Yeah. How many think we gonna kill today? It's 8 plus me and James, so 10-man limit of mallets. You know, you're like, a 10-man limit? If y'all can shoot them, we gonna kill them. We head out to the property, get out there, get them on the bikes, get them into the hole, put the decoys out, screw them and all that. This one guy goes, I'm gonna hunt next to you, Al Bourne. I don't care. I wanna see what's really going on. I said, I'm gonna tell you just how this is gonna go down. At daylight, we're gonna kill wood ducks. We're not gonna send no dogs. Mark your birds, we're gonna kill about 15, 20 wood ducks in about 5, 10 minutes. We have about a 30-minute load, and we're going to kill them out. Okay. And like clockwork, shooting night come, they come to wood ducks. Boom, 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 boom. And we kill them, we kill them, kill them. Get to the wood ducks slow up, we walk out, we start picking them up, get them out, everybody get them on the strap. So, you got any ducks? Is that you got ducks? Anybody can kill wood ducks. What are these mallets you're talking about? Now, you just came in, you've been popping your gun out quicker you can load just 10 minutes ago, you know what I mean?
Right.
So while he's in my, over here just chewing on my ear, I hear, and I look up like this here, and I swear to God, it looked like an airport. These mallets were stacked up like layers like this here, up to about 800 feet, and they were just doing this here.
Yes, sir.
I said, right there. Guy looks up. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Everybody get down. Can I call? Can I call? I said, I don't care if you call. And he went to wailing and wailing and wailing and wailing, wailing on his cop. The fresh group broke down through the trees, and he actually blew them out. They pulled out of that. Pulled out of me. Finally, we shot. One group had a hen that kept pulling the drakes out. But the third pass, they finally got around to kill them. Boom, boom, we shot them. Everywhere. So we probably got two groups in there. We got, say, 15 mallets on the deck, maybe 70% green head, you know, coming in. And their company, he worked for Baker Hughes. Somebody in their company called them. They had some kind of emergency. And they had to get two or three of them back to the office. They called, man, where we gotta go? So my partner James loaded two up, him and the other guy up, and took them out. If I'm lying, I'm flying. They probably got 300 yards from us. I condensed the group in tighter. They stay on the backside of these trees and said, now watch this here. Couple of side quacks, a feed caught another quack. 20 ducks just. Next group. Couple of side quack, 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 quack. Boom. Before James got them to the truck, we had finished out the limit. And the two guys that was in the going to the truck, they limit too. Caught them on the phone. Don't go nowhere. They finna bring your ducks to you. But this same guy was the biggest ass in the world.
Right.
So we get to the truck.
Y'all
shot your limit? I go, yeah, we got your limit too. I threw a strap of birds to take your ducks home. I looked at him. I go, man, why was you acting like that? He told me to my face. I didn't believe a black man knew how to kill ducks. He told me straight up to my face.
Yep.
I said, what? I just didn't believe a black man knew how to kill no ducks. That just told me off. But that's kind of why I like it the way it is now. The market is slowly shifting.
Mm-hmm.
For every ass, you want to say whatever, you meet a good one.
Yeah.
And people starting to see. You ain't never been to Worlds, huh?
Joint.
The first year we went to Worlds, me and Frank Dees, and one guy that's on the team, we went to Worlds and we hunted the White River. And we were back in the Cypress Swamp. And I mean, we piled driving. Man, we shot like 11 man limit. And if you ain't never been to Worlds, it's a banded rooster contest. Everybody there, when you leave the woods, you go back in the town of Stuttgart and to the World Duck Contest. You got the carnival and all this stuff. Everybody starts, got square toes on. You got your ostrich quills on, all that. You got, it reminds me of the movie Saturday Night, you got to start strutting. Well, me and Frank, I'm telling you, the me and Frank wrong. We dressed, we got on some fleece, and we just trying to see what's going on. First time, yeah. at Worlds, there was a trailer that sells T-shirts. And just different ones. I was at Worlds this year, the year, and it was 2019, exactly what it was. Worlds 2019, da da da. So me and Frank gonna get us a couple of T-shirts that was at Worlds, you know? Frank is 6'4", 6'5". He plays for A&M, tight end. He's at the track and he's trying to pick out a shirt, and this little guy walks up behind. He probably comes under Frank's armpit, Gordon. And I'm sitting there about 10 yards behind watching. This guy tapped Frank on the shoulder, little white dude, right? And Frank turns around and don't see him because he's so short. So she looks around, goes back to talk to the lady in the trailer. The guy taps him on the shoulder again. Frank turns around and looks down. The guy goes, "What are you doing here?" And Frank goes, "What? You heard me? I said, what are you doing here?" Frank goes, "Nothing." But this guy got about 10 cronies behind him. He turns around and goes, "He say he duck hunting." So he turns around and Frank go back to dealing with the merchant by buying the shirt. He goes, "That's my shirt, can't look back at him. Well, you going duck hunting, what you kill?" Frank looks back at him, Nimitz. The guy turns around his crony. "He say he shot Nimitz." You have had to been there. It is the most comical scene in the world. And I'm over on the side dying laughing. And I'm thinking, Frank going to get to the point where he's going to get irritated and it's going to go somewhere, you know?
Right.
So the guy goes, "If you shout Nimitz, let me see some pictures." And Frank was like, "Okay," he reached in his phone, got his phone out of his pocket, and Frank starts scrolling. Look, he's doing this here on that phone. The dude snatched phone, Frank's phone out of his hand. He's looking at him. "Man, look, they shot Nimitz. They shot Nimitz." "Well, y'all was at?" "We go, we were in the woods." "Y'all was at, what guy was y'all with?" "We wasn't with no guy." "You ain't with no guy?" "No." "Who was you?" "Us." He said they was by themselves. You know, it was like,
can't believe
it. "What's the problem?" "Like, you see him right there? You see the Nimitz? Y'all going tomorrow?" "Yeah." "Man, y'all want to get together?" "No." First time you being real disrespectful. You know,
super disrespectful.
"You know, I want, how you doing, brother, man? Y'all down here to hunt, you know?" "Yeah, how y'all doing today?" It was the funniest thing in the world. We laugh about that to this day. I said, "Frank, did I do this? What you doing here?
What you doing here?
What you doing here? What you mean what I'm doing here? I'm at the Ducks Festival, you know, Wings on." And, I don't know. I've had that happen a bunch of times, either in Texas or everywhere. "You duck hunt?" "Yeah." You duck hunt. You know, it's like, you duck hunt.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I mean, you duck hunt. Yeah. Well, how many, like, one of them asked, how many species have you killed? "Close to 30. And they look at you, 30? "Yeah, I'm pretty much down to sea ducks now." You know?
Right.
What?
That's crazy, man. That's that's how it is, though, man. Like around here and like different places I've been, man. Like I said, I'm almost 40 years old, but some of these places I go, man, and you know, they'll see me at a gas station, something with my camo on, and they come up to me like, what you doing? I'm like, I'm going hunting. I kind of look at their boys, man. He said he's going hunting.
Yeah, he said he's going hunting.
I'm like, man, is this like, do y'all not believe me? Is it hard for y'all to wrap your mind around that a black man in camo is about to go hunting? Same thing you about to go do? Is it, well, we don't see many of y'all around here. Well, I'm here. I do the same thing as you, and I can shoot.
Hey, you know what I wanted to tell you? When I heard about the We Do This Too podcast, and then I talked to George over there, Blueberry, and I heard you put a good word in for me. I just want to call you and thank you, brother. Appreciate that. But, like, over the last year, since we started all this filming and YouTube and all that, Brothers is my choke sponsor. They send that camera girl with all the time.
Hey, me too, now.
Yeah. And,
they called me to, I talked to them today, man. They about to send some stuff over.
Did they?
Yes, sir.
See?
I appreciate it.
See? No problem. And the camera girl jumps out the car. Nice, pretty little white girl. I mean, she's like family love. She jumps out with the camera and all that. She's taking out pictures and good morning and hugging. And you at these stores and everybody's looking at you like, who are y'all and what the hell?
Who are y'all?
Who are y'all and what the wind? And why is she hugging on y'all? And then, and I feel it's kind of eerie because as a white woman, she treats you better than these white guys who supposed to share the same passion, which is waterfowling.
Right.
Why is she more upset, accepting than they are? When she'll get out and come speak, and they'll sit there looking at you. You know, the maid won't say a word, but you see them whispering and pointing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Look, is that technique? In fact, maybe once in a while, one of them come up, y'all power circle? Yeah. Y'all videoing? Yeah. Oh, I seen y'all before. I said, man, yeah, take a sticker, you know, have a card, call me sometime, you know? I'm always down just to conversate, you know. What do you think it is? You young. You tell me what you think it is.
Man, I've had this conversation with a lot of people, man. And I think it is because most of our Caucasian brothers out there, man, they're not saying it's all of them, but it's a lot in the outdoor community. They didn't see a lot of us out in the woods when they were growing up. And it's something to them that is unknown. I always tell people, man, the black folks in this world, in this country, the swagger we got, the way that we carry ourselves, everybody, I feel like, wants to be like us, whether it's from the shoes, whether it's the way we talk, the way we walk, the way we dress. As much as people say, you know, they don't want to be like us, but then you get in the truck with them, they playing Dolph, they playing Gotti, they playing.
That's what I'm saying. They playing the music, they doing all that, and I don't see why we can't set our differences aside and just hunt or just fish.
And I'll give you one better. When they go to Florida, what they doing?
Hmm.
They land out on the beach. Why?
Yeah.
To get darker. Why?
Why? It's just time, right?
You say you don't want to be like us. You don't want to be associated with a lot of, you know, African Americans and people of color. But you out there on the beach trying to get dark, man. I'm not, you know what I'm saying? I'm not saying that's every white person out there, but that's a lot that I ran into, man. It's like, you do what? You hunt? You fish? Man, shut up. That's a white boy sport. You ain't gonna make it. All right. Hold my beer. Watch me.
What get me is on both sides, though.
It's on both sides.
Yeah, on both sides. Black folk, man, you country. I said, I'm very suburban. I live in a gated community. You know, it's 500 houses in my subdivision and all that. I said, I'm very suburban. But I grew up hunting and fishing. And what I understand, everybody that I convinced to go fall in love with
it. Yep.
All of them fall in love with it. Then I've seen over my 30, 40 years, whatever it's been, professional set, it slowly started to change. I remember when I started doing it, started getting really recognized and stuff like that. Even trying to get sponsors and stuff, slow with the fishing. Oh, we ain't doing nothing. Man, how about a motor deal? No, we ain't doing that. No. And I tell any brothers out here that's trying to do it on any level or whatever, you got to take 100 no's to get 1 yes.
Mm-hmm.
And don't let a no discourage you. I have asked the same company 10 years in a row. No, we ain't doing that. We ain't doing that. We ain't doing that. We ain't doing that. As soon as they see you doing something, they'll beat your door down. Yeah. But in the last, I'm going to say, 5 to 7 years, it's really starting to make a turn where some brothers can get in there. To me, it seemed like for a while, it was, we'll let one in here there for that token, you know. So politically correct, so you can't say we're not letting nobody, you know. But now it's on it. Over the last few years, I've been blessed, me and my boys. You asked another, we started going to run the background on how we got with Bandit. And I kept trying to figure out, how did we get with Bandit? My son bought some Bandit waders a few years back. It must have been 10 years ago, maybe more. And that's when the Bandit was having their pilot start leaking.
Yeah.
And he was doing something. He said, "Dad, can you call Bandit and talk to me? Talk to him for me." And I go, "Sure." I called him and got on the phone. We talked. And at first, they were kind of like, "We got to send them back to us and all like that." So what happened, we were going to Arkansas to hunt. And they did not have the exact waders that my son had in stock. And they told us to go to Max Prayer Wings, that they had a pair. And they got some kind of exchange program where you could take them back to Max. They'll give you a pair. But then they trade off between each other and get it right?
Right.
So we did that. And they gave my son a new pair of waders. And then a guy did a follow-up to ask me, did we get them, were they handled, blah, 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 blah. And then somehow on the phone conversation, he goes, "Excuse me, can I ask you something?" What? He goes, "Are you black?" I go, "Why?" He goes, "You sound black." I go, "Yes, I am." He said, "Man, you know, ain't too many brothers hunting. Now, ain't too many black guys duck hunting." I said, "Well, it's a whole crew of us." He goes, "Really?" I said, "Yeah, we got to talk. How long have you been waterfowling?" I said, 16. At the time, I was probably 45, 50.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, "Really?" I go, "Yeah." He goes, "You from Arkansas?" I said, "No, I'm from Houston area." He goes, "You travel?" I said, "I travel all over the country." He goes, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah." I said, "Well, you ever thought about, you know, working with any black guys?" And he was like, "Well, ain't nobody never said this, but what I'm going to do is pass this up the ladder." He took all my information. He goes, "Give me a day or two, and I have somebody call me." And I was pretty much done with the whole conversation, you know what I mean?
Right.
I'm driving down the phone. "Hello? This is so-and-so with Bandit." "Yeah." We had a good conversation with one of the guys that said this, and that, and, you know, "We'd like to talk to you, you know, I heard you this guy in your day." I said, "Yeah, I got it." And, you know, he said, "I'll tell you what, I'm going to send you an email link. Got all your information. Send it to us and we'll see if we'll review you and see what happened." And again, I did all that thinking file 13, you know what I mean?
Right.
In my mind, I said, "That's going to go in file 13. They called me back about 4 days later and said, "Yeah, you've been accepted." "What?" You know, "You've been accepted." "Yeah." "You really?" He goes, "Yeah." And from that to now, the guys at Bandit have come hunting with me. I have such a good rapport and the utmost respect for those guys. I can call them, and I got about three or four of those guys' personal phone numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And the phone rings, "Hey, bud, what's up?" "Hey, man, I'm planning to do something. I'm planning this or that, this and that." And they go, "What do you need?" And, you know, it's to the point, sometimes it's so good, we'll mail it out and we'll bill you later. Some stuff is new. "Hey, we got some new stuff. I'm going to send you this here. We'll send you that there." Some stuff is percentage. Some stuff is free. But they take good care of us, and they look at us and treat me like an equal at all times. It's cool. It's just like epic now. You know, we've been, you know, like you said, one of the biggest things with a waterfowl hunter is shells, because shells are outrageous now.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried Boss. I shot Boss. I shot Epic. I've shot these companies. I don't know. Some of it, I think, I equate to business and the market, whatever. Epic sent me some stuff 1 year, then it got quiet. Boss sent me some stuff 1 year, all of a sudden it got quiet. And it seemed like those relationships were more robotic. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I could never get, like we talking now, hey, bro, what's going on? When we got with Epic, Jason is like, hey, man, what's going on, dude? Man, da-da-da-da-da. Man, tell you what, we'll talk business. We'll laugh and talk about the football game. We can talk about the sun, the weather, you know, whatever. And then through the conversation, we talk about Shell. And, like, I think everything is timing. But people like Jason, George over there at Blue Water, the guys at Briley's, to walk in Briley's, and if you've never been there, of course, it is probably one of the most high-end gun stores in the nation.
I've heard that.
They sell more chokes than probably anybody in the world, than the Olympic shooters and all that shoot Briley's. And again, I was blessed to be at the right place at the right time, walk in and do something. Get some chokes, buy some chokes, do something. And we just started talking. And before I knew it, I was back in the main office. We got to. It was like, sure, we're looking for people like you. And again, I love not being a number, you know. Hey, Bubba. Hey, Pat. Hey, Bubba. How y'all doing, man? What's going on? Y'all hunting this weekend? What can we do for what can we need? And we can schedule every photographer, the photographer. And I can go in there and take them some shells. I'm trying to match the gun to this here and that there. And if I got some suggestions, they'll do it for me. And it's changing slowly. I think we still got a ways to go. But I can see it coming down the road. And that's where I'm at my journey now, is try to open doors and leave it for people coming down the lane.
That's I'm right.
I just want to hunt now.
Yeah, I hear you. That's why, man, me and George at Bluebird, man, we had about an hour-long conversation on the phone, man. And, you know, I've reached out to a few companies, and shout out to the companies that I have had a privilege for them to send me stuff to review and whatever. I wouldn't say I'm sponsored by anybody, but I got a few companies I'm working with. But George, man, like, he just made me feel like I've known him for 20 years, man. And we had a conversation, down to earth conversation. And I told a buddy of mine, man, I said, man, you know, if I do get to a point with this podcast where, you know, people start wanting to sponsor me in this, I said, I'm not going to just take any sponsorship. I've got to believe in your product. I've got to believe where your company's going, you know, I've got to stand for, what you stand for. We've got to match that. You know, I'm not just going to take it because you're a big name company.
And see, that's what a lot of people make a mistake. You get some products and you never use it. You never stand behind it. You want to build a lasting relationship with a company. Like I said, it got to be a give and take. What they can do for you, what you can do for them. Just like with Jason, we're going to do some film and maybe late November before he kicks off with his guy. Maybe you can get in on that hunt. We're going to come down there. We're going to spend 2 or 3 days shooting this Epic, getting some field testing on it, getting some stuff. But
let me know.
I'm telling you, just to feel on the same level with somebody, I can put my all into that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's cool that's going on now. And I feel things along with it. Because I tell you what, that's what I found out too, though. A lot of these companies, and that's, but I cannot say this because you're black, but a lot of them will give you product off the top, which is always a plus, because, you know, you're a hunter, you know, and everything costs money. Hunting is not, it's not expensive. A poor man's sport anymore.
It's expensive.
But we're getting to the point where now it's going to be time to get some monetary backing. Is the next step for Black people. It's to show that you can do it on the same level as our white counterparts. I think that's the next big thing coming. Because you know, my group tried the TV route.
Mm-hmm.
It costs so much money to try to do a TV show, though.
Oh, it does. You pretty much got to have some sponsors and some money saved up.
Some money your own to start with. And, you know, you almost got to film it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Then get sponsors to pay you back, and then try to figure out how it's going to make money in between. And like with Power Circle, we went through that big split when our group splintered. And I feel like we was too large to start off with, but my motivation then was to try to bring as many brothers into the outdoor world as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And when we first started out, we were like 14, 15 guys real quick, and which made it difficult to do stuff. People want to go left, people want to go right, people had different ideas, which was, I mean, wasn't a big deal, but made some good relationships, made some friends. But now that we're back down to a smaller group, it's easy to get along, and it's easy to deal with all this stuff. With a little bit smaller group, core group. Yeah. And then try not to be selfish and what I'm trying to say, selfish and
envious each other.
Yeah, envious each other, who is what. And then a lot of guys were getting kind of salty with me. And I'm like, what you don't understand is, well, y'all had regular jobs. This is how I was paying my bills. You know, I said, I was hunting and fishing every day. But well, that's why everybody knows, because I'm out here doing trade shows and hunting fishing. I'm bringing y'all along. To do it on a professional level, you got to be really open-minded, a team player, and willing to work together.
Absolutely.
And that's something that I find is hard to do, really, really hard to do.
Yeah. So your group is named Power Circle. So where did that name come about?
All right. Everybody wants about the Power Circle. When I dreamed the concept up, I was thinking of the group. I go, man, what is the best thing to represent a group where no one in the group is above anyone else? And the concept to me of Knights of the Round Table came. If you watched any of that back in the days, though, King Arthur and all that,
they did
the round table to institute unity. I said, so I want to name the circle. I said, so if you know what a circle is, it's all connected, right?
Mm-hmm.
Long as the circle stays together strong, the group will stay strong. And I was trying to think, came to the point of power. We need a powerful circle. We need a powerful circle. About that time, Rick Ross came out with the song Power Circle. If you listen to it, the words of the song match what we was trying to do. There's a point in there that goes, I bet your circle's not as strong as mine. It's the point that he emphasizes there. It's power to the sun, power, but I bet your circle's not as strong as mine. And so I told the guy, I said, I want to call it Power Circle, because long we stay together. And I tried to pick out guys who all had a different skill set. Devin was a young kid. He's so good. He built his own mud boat this year.
That's crazy. That's dope.
Wait a minute. He didn't go buy a hull and a motor and all that. He went and bought aluminum, designed his own boat, and welded his own mud boat together.
Welded it all. Did all work stuff.
Painted it. I said, you going to build your own boat? He said, I'm going to build my own boat. But he loves the mud boat. Ron Kelly at the time was a retired LAPD police officer, been hunting over in California, so he knew the West Coast real good. DJ, talked today, former Arkansas, so he knows all the Arkansas area.
Yeah, DJ seemed like he was a cool cat, man. Yeah. I enjoyed talking to him today.
My dog trainer, Ken Ferguson, he owns Feather Chase Water Dogs. He's one of the guys that we split with. I can't say nothing about it. He doesn't train my dog right now. But he's right over here on the floor behind me. He built me a hell of a water dog. We had some differences of opinion on situations that came up in the group that literally had nothing to do with me. Another guy in the group, him got sideways. And because I was head of the group, he felt like I should have kicked the guy out of the group. And as head of the group, I felt like they should have talked it out.
Right.
And if someone has called me right now today, or they see my dog Biscuit Hunt, who trained him? I'll tell them. Ken Ferguson, if there's a chase of water dogs, I'll text Ken. But what's it? I said, well, I've been this one. Tell him, I said, don't tell him you heard from me, but here's his number. But here's his website. He trained between the group $15-$18. Black dude, brother. I mean, and that's what I did. I told myself that when I bought this lab, that I wanted to find a brother who trained.
Right.
Who does exceptional dog training. And I scoured the United States. Not Texas, the United States. And in the, I found probably four or five nationally. Tellus Calhoun is a good buddy of mine. He's out in California. But Tellus is up in age. He's about 70. He was about ready to semi-retire. He cut back. He was a bandit, Avery sporting dog trainer. He told me he was cutting back, but... tell us, if you want to hire him to train, you got to pay. He's getting about $1,200 a month. And then there's a guy outside here in Houston. I can't even think of the brother's name. He was a decent trainer. But when I searched around the country, Ken was the guy who I felt comfortable with. We got off the phone. We had good conversation. And he drove 5 hours to my house to see my girl when she was 6 months old.
Yeah, I remember
we can do something. And that really impressed me that he would drive this far to just come make an assessment of the pup. Oh. And she's 7 now, and I can't tell you how many ducks she picked up. But like you see the ribbons on the wall behind me. That's the ribbons that she didn't want.
Biscuit, right?
Yeah, Biscuit. I don't know if whatever. I wish Ken the best, and it was Ken Ferguson, Ty Wagner, Ken Davis. This is kind of what happened. We split it a little bit because some freaks in the group. But I'm going to say I assisted the growing pains.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I ain't got nothing negative to say. I just say growing pains. You know how it is. You want to go left, somebody want to go right.
Mm-hmm.
And then guys who wasn't in doing it professionally, the sport, had ideas of grandeur at the time. And I told them, until you prove yourself, it's going to get hard. And I asked some of them, if they're not paying us, I'm not going to do this. They got to be giving me money. I said, no company's going to give you money off a phone call. Hey, my name is Courtney Williamson. You got to give me $25 a year if you want me to mention a blue water waterfowl.
Yeah, that ain't happening.
Hey, you gonna say, I appreciate the call, but thank you, but no thank you.
Right.
And I told him, I said, you gotta make him say, well, I need Courtney to be talking about my product, you know? Because mm-hmm. Courtney has X amount of followers, X amount of people, you know, hold on to his last word. Or whatever, if he says something, you can buy a bank on there. So that's what kind of happens to the group. If you know anybody in the dog train, you can tell them. Brother Chase Water Dogs out of Texarkana, Texas. He first. That's the Ken first. I'm sorry. Ken first. Good dude. But now we got me, my son, Chancellor Archie, DJ, Frank Diesel actually joined Hoodneck. I think you talked to Chris the other day.
But well, I talked to him. I've been on the phone with him, man. But I had a few things pop up, so I got Chris on tomorrow from Hoodneck. So
okay, yeah,
I'm definitely get him on, man.
We all stay right here relatively the same area. It's funny. You reach out to people via internet. I was duck hunting. Frank was duck hunting. And he reached out to me, was asking me some questions about duck hunting. And we probably talked on the internet for 2-3 months prior to duck season. And we never got to. I said, man, where you live at? He goes, I stay in Emerald Oak Subdivision. I go, I stay in Emerald Oak Subdivision. He goes, what? What street you on? I go, I'm on Emma. He goes, I'm on Silver Oak. He stays 4 blocks from me. And we've been talking right. back and forth for 2 or 3 months.
Y'all in the same neighborhood. That's crazy.
That's crazy.
That's why God works this time, man.
That's kind of how the whole group got together, by posting stuff and black guys in different areas. Kind of talking about who was when and where. And I've met people all over the country. And this is, we might have talked about this before on another phone. All over the country, I'm meeting black guys who feel like they're the only black guys in the area that are hunting, fishing, whatever, with similar beliefs. I'm already planning stuff for the 25-26 season. October next year, we're going to North Dakota for 4 to 5 days. You might want to get in on it. There's a brother in North Dakota, Jerome Boggs, B-O-O-G-G-S. He trains some of the baddest pointers and setters in the country. He wins all kinds of titles, national title, regional title. He's been calling me for probably 5 years to come to North Dakota, and he is literally 3 miles from the Canadian border. He goes, if you come up here, man, spend about a week, we can shoot upland game and then duck and goose hunt every day. You can hunt one in the morning, something in the evening, and film it. And I've just never, I'll come next year. And we sat down last week and got it all lined up. We're going to do it next year. And he said, I'm the only black guy up in North Dakota training dogs hunting like this here. He goes, I never seen a face like mine around. He's actually from Florida. And he moved to North Dakota to because the hunting's so much better up there. So we were talking about it last year. So that's another one I'm planning on next year, give these sponsors and stuff, and take about 6-8 guys up there and spend about 4-5 days. You know, shoot pheasant, grouse, quail, chucker, stuff like that, and then ducks and geese.
Make
a good 4-5 day video.
That'd be a good 4-5 day video, man. But yeah, I appreciate you taking the time out, man, to hop on this podcast, and I'm glad I reached back out to you, man, because I tell you, man, you like one of my uncles, man. That I feel like I've known you all my life, man. You got some great stories, man, and I'm glad I got you on here to tell some of these stories, because some of them stories that I think people need to hear, man, about you.
Hey, for everyone I told you, I got 100 more that you, hey, we got to get in the blind and laugh about it, cook some what we shot and talk about it. Again, brother, I know what you're talking about. I just say, if everybody out here can open their eyes and their mind, we do it too, exactly with your podcast, your title. We do this too. We do it at a high level. And with the proper backing and friends and doors open, we surprise where we can go with this thing.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. So how can people get a hold of you, man, on social media, man, if they want to reach out, talk a little bit more about Power Circle? How can they get a hold of it?
All right, Power Circle Outdoors on all platforms. That is YouTube, TikTok, Instagram. My son even has a Snapchat channel, Facebook. excuse me, I'm sorry, Power Circle Outdoors on Facebook. We on all social media platforms. If you put in Power Circle Outdoors, we'll pop up on something. Between me and my son, Patrick Watt, one of us will answer you. I'm always down to talk hunting and fishing. If someone has something good they want to get together and hunt with us, or you want us to invite us up to come film, say we travel all over the country. I've been waterfowling since age 16. I'm 62. I've been fishing since age 13. Got full ride sponsorships from, like you said, Gunner Kennel, Epic Shot Shells. Anybody ever got them? Get you some of these Epic Shot Shells, Tungsten Bismuth, Bandit does all my camo, Blue Water Waterfowl. Who else is it? I can't tell you everybody. Foul Hag. I couldn't tell you. We got everybody. And we want to be making some great videos. Got some stuff coming out this year. We're going to be real consistent this year. And look forward to seeing everybody. Always reach out and give us a shout.
That's what's up, man. Well, guys, this is a wrap. Mr. Bubba Ray, around the Houston, Texas area, man. He's an OG. He's been in the game for a long time. You know, give him a shout if you got any questions. Give me a shout if you got any questions. So I'm gonna go ahead and end the show. I got a couple shout outs. I'm gonna shout out. I've got Angry Chicken Outdoors. If you're in the Kentucky area around Hillview, man, if you need any guns, if you need ammo, any type of archery equipment, Charlie Meter, he's the owner of Angry Chicken Outdoors. Briley Choke Twos, man, I haven't had the luxury of shooting them just yet. They're going to be sending them out in about 48 hours. So I'm going to be putting them in my Retay, a couple in my Stoger. I'm going to be checking them out, man. And Uller's Archery, if you need some, any kind of archery equipment, man, they make some great stuff. Uller's, spelled U-L-L-R, apostrophe S, Archery. Bluebird Waterfowl Company, man. Hit up George, man. They've got this great product that puts a lot of movement in your spread. They're made for the Mojo, the Lucky Duck decoys, and if you're moving decoys. Deer Pimp Sense. His name's Wes Brewer. He's here in Kentucky. He owns a deer farm. He's got this thing called the Mac Daddy. And during the rut, he gets the urine from the does. You can put it in his Mac Daddy. It's like a diffuser, and it diffuses that scent out during the rut. Makes that big buck come on to you. G5, I'm going to be shooting the Montex and the Mega Meats this year. Whenever this big cold front starts to hit Kentucky, I'll be out there shooting the G5. So make sure you get on their website and check out everything they have to offer. Vision Clothing, man, he's a Black-owned company here in Louisville, Kentucky, man. His name's Lerod Whipple. He has nothing to do with the outdoors, but he makes some damn good clothes for the culture, man. So make sure to check him out, Vision Clothing. If you need any bowstrings, Threads Bowstrings here in Kentucky, man, they make a great product. I've got them on my Prime. I've got them on my Bowtech, or not my Bowtech, my PSE. They make a great string, man. Great warranty. Threads Bowstrings with a Z. Trail cameras. If you're looking for any type of trail cameras, Moultrie has got you covered. I'm running the Edge 2 right now in a place where I don't get a lot of service. And a lot of these places, Moultrie's got you covered, man. You can get service in all these places. Last but not least, Blackburn Apparel Company. Check them out, man. They've got some great products, great t-shirts, great gear, great hats. If I forgot anybody, I apologize. I'm trying to run down this list real quick, man. So what you got, Bubba?
Thanks. That you said that, I want to mention one company. We just picked up a brand new sponsor. It's Rugged Road Coolers. They're the newest, hottest cooler on the market. They make it out of a new product called Armalite. They're half the weight of all these Rotomotor coolers that we just got through with a deal with them this week. Check them out. Rugged Road Coolers. They're going to be the hottest lifetime cooler, the last one you'll ever buy.
That's what's up, man. This is a wrap, man. I appreciate y'all. Listen to my podcast. If you could go to Apple, Google, YouTube, anywhere you get your podcast, leave me a like, give me a review. It will help me out a lot, man. Big game, small game, all game. We do this too.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as three suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.